Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There are three Republicans who are seeking the GOP gubernatorial nomination in next Tuesday's primary election. What are their top campaign priorities, and why do they want to lead Vermont for the next 2 years? Today on Vermont Edition, we'll hear from these three candidates as they debate the key issues facing the state of Vermont. And with us today, in alphabetical order, are Steve Barry, Scott Milne, and Emily Payton. Steve Barry lives in Wolcott. He moved to Vermont in 1977. He's worked in sales and marketing for almost 50 years. He currently serves as the financial chair of the Moyle County Republican Party Committee. Scott Milne lives in Pomfret. He's president of Milne Travel, a business that has several branches across the state. He's currently the president of the Vermont Society of Travel Agents, and he's a past president of the Vermont Association of Private and Nonprofit Organizations. Emily Payton is a resident of Putney. She's run in two previous elections for governor. As an independent, she placed third in 2012. She spent a lot of time over the past two decades meeting with people on a grassroots level in Vermont and elsewhere in the country who gather together to seek improvements in government. Welcome to the program. It's great to have all three of you here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Just want to mention at the top of the program that Libertarian candidate Dan Feliciano, who is urging voters to write in his name in the Republican primary, asked to be part of our debate today, and we turned down that request, and this is why. The three candidates sitting here today all followed the official procedure to get on the Republican ballot. They got at least 500 signatures on their petitions. Mr. Feliciano told us that he attempted to get those 500 signatures, but he was unable to do that in the time that he had. And just to be clear, if he had gotten those signatures, he'd be joining us today because this is a debate for all Republican gubernatorial candidates. Now, we have covered Mr. Feliciano's campaign in the past and will continue to cover it in the future as part of our ongoing political news coverage of all the candidates this election year. So let's just review the format real quickly. In the first section, I'll ask candidates of you three, I'll ask questions of you three candidates. The responses should be no longer than 60 seconds. We'll have a follow-up question, and your response should be 30 seconds or less. Then in our second section, you'll have an opportunity to ask each other questions. Now, we like to make sure that those questions are no more than 30 seconds. We don't want speeches. We want really precise questions. The responses would also be limited to 60 seconds. And if you want to ask a follow-up question, that's fine as well. We'd like the response to be 30 seconds or less. And then in the third section, we're going to ask candidates questions from our listeners. Now, you can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or post your question on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, and we'll try to get it on the air. That's vermontedition@vpr.net. And then right at the end of the program, if we have time, we'll have a lightning round of questions where it'll be a lot of yes, no answers from our candidates. So with that, let's start off our debate today, and let's talk about health care. I think it's an issue that's on a lot of people's minds. As you all know, Governor Peter Shumlin would like Vermont to become the first state in the country to implement a single-payer system in 2017. He says it will offer coverage to all Vermont residents, and that coverage would be independent of where they work. He says the system would be publicly financed based in part on a person's ability to pay. He says health care is a right and not a privilege. Steve Barry, is the governor on the right track with his approach to health care?
Well, all we have to do is look at the VA. I mean, that's single payer in itself. What I mean by that is the government owns the buildings. The doctors work for the governor. The nurses work for the governor, government. And you can look at, see all of the travesty that's happening. They have a 90-day waiting list for the average vet that has fought hard for our country. A lot of them are being neglected, simple colonoscopies. A lot of them are dying because of this secret waiting list that is now just being exposed. It's going to be the same with any single payer. No competition means it's all going to be one size fits all, And the only ones that will really prosper out of this are the elite, and that is the leaders.
So there are a number of Vermonters who feel that the current system is not affordable, is not accessible. Are they right? What changes would you make?
Well, to answer that question, right now we're paying a 15% payroll tax, and Shumlin is actually looking at a carbon tax. This is going to adversely affect everybody that's driving a car. And it's the only bit of freedom that we have left, is to get behind your wheel and go anywhere in this country you want. But with a carbon footprint, say the average person drives 12, 15,000 miles a year. Well, she just said that's the end, so I can't finish this thing.
Well, you can certainly wrap up when you see that you're out of time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the point I was trying to make is that, say, for instance, when you go to register your car, there's going to be a fee of maybe up to $1,000. This is going to put a lot of Vermonters out on – they're just going to have to give up their car.
Scott Milne, you've said that you're, quote, agnostic about single-payer and that you're going to withhold final judgment until you see the details of the governor's plan. And this approach has been strongly criticized by a number of Republicans who think you should be voicing very strong opposition to the governor's proposal. Tell them why they're wrong and you're right.
Thank you, Bob. And I want to thank Steve and Emily for what's been a robust and healthy dialogue so far through the primary. And I look forward to that continuing for the next 72 hours or so. To answer your question, I believe that for folks that are ideologically true believers that single payer is the be-all, end-all and is going to fix things for us, they've gotten a really bad deal from the Shumlin administration's management of the implementation of the healthcare exchange, which is step one of getting towards a waiver to get a federal single-payer program set up. Folks on the other end of the of the spectrum that feel that single-payer is ideologically not going to work, I believe are fighting this ideological battle within the Republican Party. When my campaign is really built on finding practical solutions for the problem. So what I've said is very clearly, we've got a governor who's had three terms to come up with how we're going to pay for the system, how it's going to work, and has been unable to do that. And we're working very hard to have a system in place that's going to provide accessibility to health care for Vermonters and not chase doctors out of state.
So I think you've got roughly 50 employees at Milne Travel. Is that correct?
By the definition of the Vermont government, we have 50 full-time employee equivalents, but we have about 75 people altogether.
And do you offer them health insurance?
We offer a subsidy for health insurance, yes.
So from a philosophical point of view, is the best way to provide health care coverage to Vermonters in the future, does it come from their place of employment? Or should it be independent of where they work?
I think mixing philosophical arguments with finding practical solutions is part of the problem we have with the current governor. And one of the reasons that I'm running, if it turns out to be more practical to have it based on employment or have employment be a primary part of it, we'll come forward and advocate that. If not, we'll come up with a different strategy.
Emily Payton, what are your thoughts about health care? Is Governor Shumlin right? Do all Vermonters have a right to health care, and is his approach the best way to achieve this goal?
Well, I wouldn't call it that we have a right. I think a society is more humane if it takes care of its people, and I don't want to be part of a society that is so inhumane as to leave sick people on the side of the road. But we have enormous overcharging by the businesses in medicine. And I think that Bernie Sanders is really on the right track about reducing the cost, seeking cheaper medications elsewhere than what we can get within the United States. He's also promoting the community health care centers. And this is what I've been terming direct care. Our dollars need to be going directly to the healers and the doctors in a much more efficient manner. And we've been supporting all kinds of profit that doesn't belong in the healthcare field, I believe.
So under your system, would the delivery of healthcare services be much more localized and community-based?
I'd like to see a free health clinic, which wouldn't be free in that we would fund the health clinic in every single town that or population center that people can frequent and go in. And I'd also like to see us paying for the tuition of our future health care providers and also have a salaried doctors rather than fee-for-service.
You are listening to the GOP gubernatorial debate on Vermont Edition. Now, if you've got a question for the candidate, send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or post your question on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, and we'll try to get to it just a little later in the debate. Let's go to question number two from me. Many people in the state of Vermont, Scott Milne, think that the state is facing a property tax crisis. Number of students in the state has declined by more than 10% in the last decade. Overall spending on education continues to rise. Lawmakers are looking at several options to deal with this situation. They're talking about maybe mandating the consolidation of smaller school districts. One-third of all districts in Vermont have fewer than 100 students. They're looking at requiring larger class sizes in all schools. They're talking about creating a statewide teacher's contract. They're looking at restricting eligibility in the income sensitivity program. They're talking about reducing the state's share of local education costs. I'm sure there are many other plans on the table. Here's your chance right now, and please be very specific, to tell Vermonters what you would do if you're elected governor.
Thank you, Bob. One of the principles upon which this campaign of Milne for governor is founded, one of the principles upon which I will work on behalf of Vermonters if I'm fortunate enough to be elected, is that the more local a decision can be made, the better that decision is. And we're seeing some signs of promise from that. In Windsor County, towns have gotten together on their own, realized that populations are shrinking and maybe it's not fair to taxpayers to run too many schools. And they're coming up with proposals on their own. They, granted, have people on different sides with different opinions. But one thing that's nice about local decisions that have people on different sides with different opinions is you get over it. I remember back as a child in Washington, Vermont, going to town meetings where we'd have heated discussions, the Republicans, the Democrats, the folks with different opinions. We'd get over it. We'd have lunch together. Then in the afternoon, you get on and talk about the school budget. So the more locally we can make decisions, the more likely are people to not hold grudges about being on a side that they don't like. So local will be the solution that I'll use for everything, school included.
Now, there's some people at the State House who think that the program of income sensitivity, and that's the program that allows homeowners to pay their school taxes based on their income instead of the value of their property. Some people at the State House think this program really needs to be scaled back. What are your thoughts?
I think if we go back to the Brigham decision and the onset of Act 60, which was essentially towns in some parts of the state spent an awful lot of money on schools and didn't have really a per capita spending that was anywhere close to more affluent towns that spent a lot less money in total and had a much higher spending per pupil. So the goals of Act 60 to equalize education across Vermont have been well-founded. The income sensitivity is part of this recipe. The big challenge with the current system we have for funding schools through property taxes, income sensitivity, and other things is arguably there's only two or three people in Vermont that can really explain it to you. So we need to come up with simpler solutions that everybody can buy into. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes that need to come in the next 2 years.
Emily Payton, what are your thoughts on this? Does Vermont face a property tax crisis?
Oh, yes. Property tax in and of itself is a crisis against private ownership of property. We're talking about education and how that is raising our property taxes. I think that the federal mandates, No Child Left Behind, is in fact increasing our costs for education. And if we really want to have higher excellence in students, we need to encourage independent schools rather than to consolidate and have more costs at an administrative level. We also should be allowing money to follow the pupil, particularly into the homeschooling realm, where we're seeing excellently competent students emerge from Vermont. I am not in favor of mandating school consolidation. And I'm also not in favor of a moratorium on schools becoming independent. We see in Windhall that they've lowered the cost per pupil while increasing student competency by going independent, and North Bennington has just done that as well. They want to go that direction, so I think we should encourage that.
So it sounds like under your plan, you'd have just full student choice across Vermont. Could students go to any school that they wanted to?
Well, I think their parents have something to do with it.
Could parents choose to send their students to any school in the state under your plan?
Well, I think that that would be an improvement. I think different schools are strong in different areas, and every student has strengths in different areas. You may have a student that's really strong in sports, another one that's really strong in arts, another one's that's really strong in mechanics. So for parents to recognize the strengths of their students and be able to send them to the appropriate school, that will reduce your costs of paraprofessionals. You know, if you have a student that couldn't sit still that could go into a sports program or a skiing program somewhere else, it will cost less, you see.
Steve Berry, what are your thoughts about property taxes, property tax crisis? What would you do about this problem?
Well, actually, I believe a little bit of what Scott said and Emily. First, we do need local control. And I also believe in vouchers and school choice. We already have one of the oldest laws on the books, about 143 years, that there's 100 villages in Vermont at present that have school choice. But you can go up to any one of those parents in those towns, and they're under the assumption that their choices are only from public. They have choices from three or four different public schools. But they have been discouraged from private, and that is in that law. There's a $13,000 tuition that is available through the private sector. But this has, again, been discouraged. Now, as governor, I would make sure that I would encourage entrepreneurship in every village, every town, to offer vouchers and school choice and let competition rule.
What about the idea that some people at the State House want to mandate school consolidation districts so that districts are larger? Would you support that approach?
Well, no. I mean, here again, we have one size fits all, and we're going to have bureaucrats controlling and taking the control away from the parents. This is the worst thing we could ever do, and it's going to eliminate that law that's on the books today. And I'm totally against that. And also, speaking of Act 60, that was born from the great buyout, the famous buyout of the farms. See, we can go back 60 years and we'll find that every town was flourishing because of the influence of the farm. Once you eliminated that, then we had to come up with another way to balance the towns that doesn't have any funds coming in. So, see, Act 60 is pure, unadulterated socialism.
Well, this concludes the first section of the GOP gubernatorial debate on Vermont Edition. If you've got a question for the candidate, send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or visit the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Coming up next, the candidates will ask each other some questions. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to the Republican gubernatorial candidates debate on Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With us today are the three candidates on the GOP ballot next Tuesday. That would be Emily Payton, Steve Berry, and Scott Milne. If you've got a question for the candidates, send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Well, it's time for the second part of our program, a chance for the candidates to ask each other some questions. Just a reminder, please make your questions as brief as possible and your responses no longer than 60 seconds. But if you want to ask a follow-up question, that's fine too, but don't feel that you have to. So to start this round, Scott Milne, who gets your first question?
Thanks, Bob. Steve, good to be here with you again. Steve, you, like me, are one of two people in this race that I think by definition are going to be supporting the Republican Party nominee after the primary on Tuesday, meaning that we're not registered to run for another party in the general election. If you lose, what do you think are the most important things for the Republican nominee to accomplish in order to defeat the incumbent Democratic governor?
Well, that's a loaded question. And the reason why I say that, I don't like the way the Vermont Republican Party has kind of preordained you as the front runner, and also the mainstream media. Now, I guess my question to you is, I believe they did this because I think you're the pathway to the least resistance of the Shumlin administration and the progressive movement. So that is why they're backing you. Now, I am going to support whoever does win. Reluctantly, yes, if it's you. No offense. You're a great guy, and I think you're a good businessman. But I just don't think you have the gumption, the fire in the belly, and the wisdom that is needed.
Would you like to ask a follow-up question?
No, thank you, though.
Emily Payton, who gets your first question?
Let's see. I'll ask you, Scott. The growth of the organic food industry and the renewable and green industry has been phenomenal, as citizens agree with the scientific community that global warming is a man-made crisis. Tell me, why aren't Republicans interested in getting off of fossil fuels when our future depends on it?
Thanks, Emily. I would disagree with the premise that Republicans aren't interested in climate change solutions and getting off fossil fuels. I think there's serious questions about energy policy, where you have giant corporations taking advantage of tax policy, tax loopholes, tax credits to develop big wind and big solar, without which that energy would not be economically viable. So I agree with the goals. I agree that we need to do things. But I don't think that the current pathway is, by and large, the smartest way to go forward.
Well, how would you get off of fossil fuels, and how would you do it soon enough?
I think natural gas has become a robust alternative in the last several years. I fully recognize that it's a fossil fuel. But it's a low-cost, cleaner fossil fuel that's domestically produced, that offers a relatively safe transition off fossil fuels, that will not bankrupt the government with tax credits for things that are unproven. It's very good for our national security, and that it's either domestic or North American-based production. And provides export opportunities. So I think natural gas is a very good development.
Steve Berry, who do you have a question for?
Well, Emily, you seem to be heading towards this green energy entirely. And I'm sure you realize that almost everything that we consume is based on fossil fuel, to the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, the software that we are so accustomed to. Everything that we touch has to do with fossil fuel. And I believe that this environment to totally go green is a lot of junk science to it. And I would say, if you're going to push for this and just eliminate fossil fuel, I think you're barking up the wrong tree, so to speak. How would you address this?
Well, I see our planet as sacred, and I see a lot of destruction coming to the planet, specifically through corporate oil. And we send people to war just on behalf of Mobil and Exxon. We lose our young people to war just to fight for oil. I know and I have seen the brilliance of the kind of green technology that we have, that we could employ, from solar roads to solar. I don't agree that we should be importing frack gas underneath the Lake Champlain or destroying our ridgelines. And, of course, that's why I encourage agricultural hemp, because there are so many products with which we can make from it that will replace the petroleum products that we use today.
Would you like a follow-up question?
Well, you are totally against, say, the Alaskan pipeline coming down?
Oh, my goodness. Science has shown that if we continue with the tar sands exploration, it will be game over for climate change. That bitsmith that would be coming across the Northeast Kingdom is highly corrosive. So I would do everything in my power to stop the tar sands from crossing this state.
Oh, my goodness.
That concludes our first round of candidate questions. Now we're going to move on to round two. Emily Payton, let's start with you. Which candidate gets your second question?
Ah. Steve. I see enormous racism still existing in this state, and I also see a prison corrections industry that is often doing harm and not really giving us results that make us safer. What would you do to improve our criminal justice system?
Well, that's an easy question. First, we have to decriminalize drugs as we know it. And you see, most people don't realize if they actually looked at the numbers, 20% of the population are addictive in nature. They're going to get their drugs one way or the other. Now, it's just a question of who do you want the merchant to be? Now, I profess to say that I would rather have everything legal. And then if somebody, it's like the methadone clinics right now. We have five in the state throughout Rutland, Bennington. There's one in St. Johnsbury, Newport, and Berlin. Now, see, the majority of those people that are on meth are actually productive citizens. They go in and they get their fix, and they go off to work. It's the same thing that can happen to any drugs. By throwing these people in jail, all it is clogging up the system, and nobody wins.
Follow up. By the U.S. Department of Justice's own numbers, we currently have between 500 and 800 people incarcerated who are factually innocent. Could you speak to the problems with our system that we could possibly be incarcerating innocent people like that?
Well, that's the justice system. I mean, first we have judges that are appointed by political hacks, I call them. I believe judges should be elected and not appointed, and then get away from this ideology that's destroying this country and this state. We have to apply free market principles in every area of the way we live, and that's just getting back to where it used to be. I believe in going back to the future.
Steve Berry, who gets your second question?
Okay. Yes, yeah, Scott. I have been thinking about this. Based on what I answered your question, and it's a pretty good shot that you will be nominated. It's probably already laid out. But I know that it's up to the people to decide who it is. But we have 40% of the population that are not paying attention. What can you do that could change my mind about you once you become governor?
Thanks, Steve. Just to paraphrase I think we'll all be together with Senator Bill Doyle at a debate at Johnson State College next week. Might be taking a little poetic license on a conversation I had with Senator Doyle, but I asked him what he thought my chances were in the election, and I think I got this right, but I might be off a little bit if you're listening, Senator Doyle. I think he said, Scott, everybody has a shot. It's possible even Peter Shulman's going to pull this one out. So I'm not taking it for granted that I'm going to be the nominee. If you are, I'll look forward to being nice to you. What I've said consistently, I had a town hall by telephone with about 30,000 outgoing calls last night, a little over 10,000 people participating. And what I promise people is that I will always listen before I act. One of the biggest criticisms I have of the incumbent is that things are done based on politics, not based on what is practical. You seem like a practical guy to me. If you have something you want to talk about, I'll very clearly listen to you before I act.
Would you like a follow-up at all?
Well, yes. I do have a pet peeve with the tobacco industry. It's since 1998 with the settlement. There was Vermont has been receiving between 127 and 130 million each and every year for the past 16 years. Now, as governor, would you look into that and see where all that money's going? Because I'm looking at two different reports, and actually, it's from the annual. All right, I lost it. But anyway, these two reports, I'm done.
I think it's a good question, Steve. I think it speaks to the overall – what we've seen in the last 4 years with the current administration is they've used every trick in the kitchen to pull money from one place or another to make it seem like the ship of state is afloat and not sinking. We've got a government that's growing at about three times the rate of the growth of the economy. So taking tobacco money to prop that growth up, taking money out of the higher education scholarship fund, some of these other things, gimmicks that were used this year, those are all chickens that are going to come home to roost in the next governor's administration that's going to make it a very, very challenging economic time for Vermont. So tobacco just speaks to the whole big picture of hiding the radical progressive agenda of the current administration and its effect – negative effect on the pocketbook interests of average Vermonters.
Scott Milton, who gets your second question?
I'll be fair, Emily. Emily, unlike Steve and I, you've run for governor before, so you're a little bit more of a veteran in this than we are. You had a platform last time you ran and ideas you talked a lot about. Have you changed your mind on any of those ideas, or are those a foundation upon which some of the newer things that you're talking about this time are built, or did you propose things last time that after a few years of thinking about it, you've changed your mind on?
No, my platform is built from the work of the nonprofits around this country and from people around the state and around the country who really want to improve government and the democracy and the republic with which we are involved in. I have not had much success with the problem of the press not covering there's sort of a collusive relationship between the parties and the press to enhance certain candidates. So we really need to open democracy up. The points on my platform and my comprehensive platform, including monetary policy, which we haven't talked about yet, are all on my website. It's impossible to have in-depth debates here with a two-minute sound bites, and we really need to have discussions around the state that delve deeply into our energy problems, where we take an hour as candidates to talk with the people.
Emily, in the past, I believe, advocated that Vermont should secede from the Union. Do you still believe that?
Well, what I have said is we need to get financial independence. Our problems with poverty increase the taxation because we need more social services. That's because we're not circulating money appropriately to all the members of Vermont, all the people in Vermont. So if we had appropriate monetary policy such that everybody could engage in the economy in a dignified way, could make a living, then we would have the financial independence right now that we do not, and we'd be much more secure as a state. So that's what I have advocated for always.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This concludes the second part of our debate, and coming up next, we're going to turn to your questions for the candidates. This is the GOP gubernatorial debate on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to the Republican gubernatorial candidates debate on Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With us today, Scott Milne, Steve Berry, and Emily Payton. It's time now for some of the questions from our listeners, some of the many emails that we've gotten. Ask the candidates to be as brief as possible so that we can ask the same question of all three of you. We touched on this issue a little earlier. Steve Berry, you touched on this, so maybe you could lead us off. Damien posted on our Facebook page, he wants to know if you would support the legalization of marijuana in Vermont. And if that bill gets passed by the legislature, as governor, would you sign it?
Yes, I would.
That's pretty clear. Emily Payton.
Yes, I would phase it in 3 years. In 2016, legal to grow, 2017, sales, and 2018, whatever it is, the next one, we would have sales of edibles.
Scott Mill?
Thank you, Bob. Clearly consistent with one of the primary planks of my principles for running. The more locally decisions can be made, the better they are for everybody. If you're interested in legalization of marijuana as a Vermont citizen, talk to your legislator about it. If a bill reaches my desk from the legislature to legalize marijuana, I will do that. Unlike our current incumbent, I will not be flying around the country taking money from special interest groups or fundraising with special interest groups that are related to the marijuana industry and trying to have a top-down pushing legalization once this RAND Institute study is done.
We got this email from Wayne, who says, Governor Shumlin has ignored the increasing number of gun incidents in the state to help improve public safety. Would you support, number one, expanded background checks for all gun transactions and purchases, and two, improve reporting of mental health status to the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System? Emily Payton, what do you think?
Well, I think that if you really want to decrease gun violence, you need to decrease the opiate prescription practices. And in other words, in increasing the amount of background checks is not going to decrease the gun violence. If you increase the flow of money into the sensitive populations, then you reduce the reasons why they are being pressed into violence. So I think we need a more comprehensive approach, and we actually need to address why they are violent, and it's up to a community to choose.
Steve Berry, what do you think?
Any type of gun control only affects the people that are paying taxes and abiding by the law. There's no there is no restriction out there that is going to stop that person, that criminal intent or the insanely intent, from hurting somebody. They'll grab a hammer. Well, maybe we should have registration of a hammer. Or why don't we just go and continue to register everything that might be damaging to a person? It's totally crazy. Right now, that's close to 70% of all homeowners in the state of Vermont have a weapon. And we have one of the lowest crime rates in the country.
Scott Mill?
I believe that the gun laws that are on the books in Vermont are sufficient, and I would not advocate for changes.
We got this email from Blake in Johnson, who wrote us, within the past decade, the state has seen a significant amount of Vermont's youth departing the state, mostly in response to Vermont's stagnant economy. How would you combat and revitalize our state economy so more Vermonters would be able to stay and raise a family? I know it's a big question. Let's see if we can just hit the high points very briefly. Emily Payton?
Well, I think we really need to do a student exchange for tuition. And we can do this with our agricultural fields, and we can do it with our medical professionals. That's the short answer.
Steve Berry.
Well, for the past 25 years, the state has been pushing for a more of a tourist state, and it's actually turned into a playground for the rich. And the only decent job there is service related. We get kids coming out of college that either leave the state or they become workers for the state. And this is this is very bad. And what we got to do is eliminate Act 250 for one, and there's all kinds of acts out there. You take the average person that wants to come in here and set up shop and hire people and start up a business, it takes up to 15 years. We should try to do something like New York is doing and just let the people come in, set up shop, and hire people. And then you come in and say, well, if you're doing a good job, then that's the way it should be.
Scott Mellon.
Thank you, Bob. I think first maybe to point out something that's going well with the current administration. This, microbrewery, farm-to-table, entrepreneurial farmer, brewer, whether those folks stay in farming or brewing, those are young entrepreneurs that are learning good business skills. So a shout-out primarily to Chuck Ross and the people at the Department of Agriculture for that. The problem, you know, 15 seconds that I see that is a huge problem with the current administration is the tone from the top. We have a perception that we're not good for business. I will argue it's a reality. When you have a governor that signs a GMO labeling bill that could have been done in a much more friendly way and then stands in front of a sign saying we're starting a food fight, we have a governor who has this very aggressive platform in his first gubernatorial campaign to put 600 people out of work in Vernon. Those are not things that bode well for folks out of state with a lot of money that want to look to a place like Vermont and create jobs, and that's something that will change.
So as we approach now the end of our program, I do have one final question for all of you. Vermont voters are getting to know you as candidates. What do you want them to know about you that perhaps right now they might not be aware of? Something that actually might cause them to vote for you next Tuesday. Emily Payton?
Well, you need to know that you can write in my name if you aren't a Republican, and I would like that support. I also will work with the communities and enable the work that the Worker Center has done to include communities in the budgeting process. I think this is very important. So I'll be spending time, if I'm elected, with the communities to create the budgets that comes out of this potentially my administration.
Scott Mill?
Thanks, Bob. Since many pundits, not you that I've heard, though, Bob, say that I have zero name recognition, I guess I can assume people don't know too much about me. For those of you that do, I apologize if this is redundant, but my family has been in Vermont for about 100 years. My grandfather was a state legislator from Barry, and although people think of the 100-year rule of Republicans, Barry was a union town, a Democrat town from Reconstruction until 1938 when my grandfather was the first Republican representative elected from Barry between the Civil War and then. Dean Davis actually ran before him and lost that race. Both my mother, father, and grandfather have all been state legislators and focused on service. My mom, who was one of my biggest supporters at my campaign kickoff, passed away last week unexpectedly, so I've lost one of my great supporters. But I remember my mom's first race in 1994 when she was elected. Her campaign theme was, I'm just naive enough to believe that I can make a difference. So I think what I would like people to join me in believing is that one at a time, if you think we need more balance in Montpelier and you need a more moderate government, I'd like you to believe that you can make a difference and join me, and we'll bring some balance back and get Vermont back on track.
Steve Barry.
Now, is this a summation? Do I have another chance?
Right now, tell us something about yourself that you want voters to know when they go into the voting booth next Tuesday.
Well, there's two subjects that I want to talk about. Do I have another chance to talk about that?
You got about 45 seconds to tell us whatever you want.
Okay, and that's it? Okay. Well, first of all, see, Vermont, I believe, is ruptured, critically injured, morally and financially. And the only way to fix this is to stop the bleeding. And by saying that is, as soon as I become governor, if those people out there see it fit, then I would demand an audit across the board, but I would do it through the private sector, and I would actually pay them 10 cents on every wasted dollar that they find. That way, once you stop the bleeding, then you can go in there and fix it.
Well, this concludes our GOP gubernatorial debate on Vermont Edition. Many thanks to the candidates for coming by. We appreciate it. And also, we'll have a link to your websites at the VPR website so all our listeners can learn more about your campaigns. That is our show for today. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was performed by Eric Owazin and performed by the New Trombone Collective. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.